Hola, I'm Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States.
There's a crisis of power in Venezuela, and the United States had this message for the country.
Nicolas Maduro is a dictator with no legitimate claim to power. He's never won the presidency in a free and fair election, and he's maintained his grip of power by imprisoning anyone who dares to oppose him. The United States joins with all freedom-loving nations in recognizing the National Assembly as the last vestige of democracy in your country, for it's the only body elected by you, the people.
The Trump administration has long opposed and battled President Nicolas Maduro, including considering a military intervention in Venezuela in 2017. And now the U.S. has a new figure to put their support behind, opposition leader Juan Guaido.
Asumir formalmente las competencias del Ejecutivo Nacional.
On Wednesday, the streets of Caracas and cities across Venezuela were filled with protesters backing Guaido. After Guaido swore himself in, Venezuelan supporters sang the national anthem. And in a statement, President Trump formally recognized Guaido as president, echoing the words of Vice President Pence.
We say to all the good people of Venezuela, estamos con ustedes. We are with you. We stand with you. And we will stay with you until democracy is restored and you reclaim your birthright of libertad.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. In just a moment, we'll talk more about the U.S. support of a transition of power, or what some would call a coup. But we begin in Caracas, where at least seven protesters have been reported killed in this week's protests. Ana Vanessa Herrero is a reporter for The New York Times on the ground, and she's been covering the protests.
So we are talking about several protests only on Monday, at least 13 in different slums. This is the important part and the different part from other years, because in 2017, 2014, we saw the east of Caracas, which was middle class, upper middle class, on the streets wanting to take their rights back. But right now, things were completely different. This happened on Monday, and on Tuesday happened the same thing overnight. But yesterday, this Wednesday, it was overwhelming. We saw hundreds of thousands of people in Venezuela, in the country, marching and asking Maduro to step back and to open a path for transition. That was the opposition, because the government also called for a demonstration this Wednesday. And although they did have people on the streets, mostly ministry workers, it was completely different from before also, because I couldn't see more than maybe 100 people in one rally. So that was the scenario yesterday. And then after Juan Guaido took the next step and declared himself as president, as interim president, people again started going out to the streets, and clashes began. They began around 2 p.m. Caracas time, and they ended around 3 a.m. Caracas time.
Let's talk a little bit about Guaido, who is the person who, the opposition leader, who essentially has just named himself interim president in Venezuela. Are we on the verge of a coup? Is this a coup? And what can you tell us about his supporters?
Okay, so the first thing we need to know is that Venezuela has two realities right now. For the opposition, for the National Assembly, this is completely constitutional. The Constitution says that if the president is no longer available, if he is declared insane, or if he can't fulfill the work, then the president of the National Assembly should take and has to take power and has to assume the presidency. That is what they're doing. They say that Nicolas Maduro is not the president anymore. He's usurping power. So if that spot, they need to fill that spot with something. So the next logical step inside of the Constitution is Juan Guaido.
More than 2 million Venezuelans have left the country in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. There are now two people claiming to be the president. Venezuela has been dealing with a humanitarian crisis for quite some time. Where does the country go from here, Ana?
Yesterday, when I was at the demonstration, something caught my attention was that many people that I talked to while they were marching said, well, I have nothing else to lose. My family, you know, half of my family is in 7 or 8 different countries. They're not even in the same country anymore. So they're not even together in exile. I have nothing to eat. I have an income salary that is about $6 a month. That is the minimum wage here in Venezuela. So you know what? I don't really care anymore. And that was the sentiment yesterday. With that kind of a feeling, it doesn't seem likely to go for something better. I think Venezuela is touching deep ground right now. And this has to follow its natural path. So really, I mean, that question, actually, it's really hard to answer.
Ana Vanessa Herrero is a reporter for the New York Times. Thanks, Ana.
Thank you so much.
From the streets of Caracas, we now go to Washington, where American support for the opposition pushed President Maduro to break off relations with the United States on Wednesday. Eric Farnsworth is vice president of the Council of the Americas. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tanzina. It's good to be with you.
So let's start off by talking about the Vice President Pence's video message. What was your reaction to that initially?
Well, I think it was a very bold and strong statement of support for the opposition leader. It's not the normal thing necessarily for a U.S. vice president to be so direct in voicing support for an opposition leader in a foreign country. But having said that, it is part of a process that's been building for some time. The vice president has been very vocal about the need for change in Venezuela. Every time he travels to Latin America, it's a priority issue. Other senior administration officials have clearly made this a topic of conversation. So in that context, it's not anything that perhaps we wouldn't anticipate.
This particular administration, the Trump administration, has been very hostile to anyone coming across. You know, we have the issue on our southern border. A lot of those folks have been fleeing violence and other issues in Latin America. And a lot of the protesters we're seeing on the ground in Venezuela are actually lower income, poorer Venezuelans, not wealthier Venezuelans. So I'm trying to see how the administration can feel some sort of compassion or desire to help this population of Venezuela while also extending policies that seem to hurt the wider population.
You know, this is a very relevant question.
It does feel like a contradiction here, and it's hard for me to grasp.
Well, it can, absolutely. And I think the answer to that would be, and I don't speak for the administration, but from an outsider perspective, it would seem that the answer to that could be that they look at some of the population flows from Central America as a domestic issue, in other words, an immigration issue into the United States, whereas they're viewing Venezuela as a foreign policy issue. And so if you take it from that different reference points, then I think you begin to see how a difference in approach could come to be.
President Trump said on Wednesday that, quote, all options are on the table when it comes to military action in Venezuela. As we know, this administration is not a fan of President Nicolas Maduro. Is that something you would support, any type of military intervention? Is that realistic given what's happening on the ground?
I don't think that's imminent, and I don't think it's something that should occur except in the most dire of circumstances. Saying that all options are on the table is generally a statement of fact, because that is just a reality. There are other options there. But in saying that, it does seem to be laying a marker for the Maduro regime, which is to say, don't take action against Juan Guaido, who we, the United States, have recognized, and many other countries around the world have recognized as the interim president of Venezuela, and don't do anything that would necessitate some sort of stronger response from the United States. But having said that, no, I don't think that particular issue is imminent, and Latin Americans would not support a military intervention. I think that would change the circumstances dramatically. It would bilateralize the situation, turn it into a U.S. versus Venezuela issue, whereas, in fact, the issue should remain focused on the ground in Caracas.
What about sanctions against Venezuela, particularly, you mentioned crude oil. What about sanctions there? I mean, how realistic is it that the U.S. could enact more sanctions?
Well, I think it's very realistic, particularly to the extent extent that Maduro does not leave office anytime soon. I think the U.S. Will continue to ratchet up pressure, and the logical next step, because it will have the largest impact, is the energy sector. That is basically the sole earner of hard currency for Venezuela. And so the United States has real leverage there, but has resisted doing anything significant on the energy sector for years on the assumption that, in fact, doing so would hurt the Venezuelan people. And nobody wants to do that. They're looking to influence behavior by the government, but not hurt the people.
The United States also, as we know, has a long history of interfering in Latin American politics. You know, and much of that is also influenced, as I mentioned earlier, the migrations that we're seeing into the United States. What does the United States have to do under this administration or future administrations to move forward on the issue of Venezuela without repeating what it's done in the past, without having this strong arm, you know, U.S. is going to come in and take over?
Nothing happens in a vacuum, and I can tell you with direct knowledge that people are aware of the perceptions of the history of the United States in Latin America.
Well, not just the perceptions, the realities also.
Well, sure, and you can have that discussion, and certainly during different time periods, the U.S. has been very directly involved. And so it is very clear that the administration, to a greater or lesser extent, following the pathway laid down by the Obama administration beforehand, has been doing what it can to allow a consensus within the Western Hemisphere and Latin America specifically to develop, to take the lead in addressing this issue so that the United States is not put in a position to have to intervene directly or in some military manner.
Also, I'm wondering if you see any parallels here with this sort of behind-the-scenes approach between what we're seeing now and the U.S. intervention in Chile in 1973 that ultimately led to the coup.
I don't. It's a different time. It's a different place. It's certainly a different country. And I just think the two aren't that related.
In terms of support, Canada also recognized Guaido, like the United States did this week. A number of other countries have in Latin America. Mexico, however, and Uruguay are not supporting Guaido. Well, how will that impact our relationship with Mexico going forward?
Well, it's a disappointment in my view, but not a surprise that Mexico has chosen this path, and the same with Uruguay. Does that bleed over into the bilateral relationship, particularly as the U.S. Congress is set to consider perhaps the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, the replacement for NAFTA in the relatively near timeframe? It could complicate things, but at the end of the day, I think Congress is going to be more interested in voting on things like, you know, provisions in the auto sector that might create jobs in their districts or in their states, as opposed to what the president of Mexico might have to say or not have to say in Venezuela.
Eric Farnsworth is vice president of the Council of the Americas. Eric, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.